Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Developer Express. Become a UI superhero with DevExpress, controls, and libraries. Deliver elegant .NET solutions that address customer needs today by leveraging your existing knowledge. You can build next-generation touch-enabled solutions for tomorrow. You can download your free 30-day trial at dx.hanselminutes.com. That's dx.hanselminutes.com.
From hanselminutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 526. In this episode, Scott talks with software developer and development manager Louise Elliott about punishment-driven development.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Today on the phone, I've got Louise Elliott. She's a software development manager in the finance industry, works at the Leeds Building Society. And you've been in the software world for, what, 25 years? And you've done it all, development manager, technical manager, architect.
Absolutely, yeah. I love the technical industry. It actually took me a long time to get into management, and I fought it for a long time. But I love it. Now I'm here.
Okay. So as a manager and someone who's got, we have very similar backgrounds. I worked in finance and did credit unions and what you call building societies for many, many years. And I did things like TDD and BDD and all the different driven developments. But you've got a really interesting perspective on a kind of development. And what is that?
That's punishment driven development. I obviously would have loved to have called it blame-driven development, but apparently BDD is already used.
So punishment-driven development, is this like, you know, death marches and let's...
It's just what I see everywhere in the industry, you know. Even with things like Agile and other ways of working where we're supposed to be moving on and doing things in a new way, I still see punishment used everywhere in the industry.
I've got kids, and I don't mean to necessarily equate children to developers, but, you know, we've all ran teams. Punishment doesn't always work, though. I mean, is it really a motivator? Is it going to get people up in the morning and send them into work?
Well, I think probably not, actually. But yet, we see it all the time. You know, I think one of the main reasons that people punish people in the workplace is really around retribution. It seems more about it's going to make me feel better to punish them for that than it is about actually creating behavioral change. The only thing I see it creating is a climate of fear where people are not willing to take risks, don't feel it's safe to fail. And that's not good for any organization.
Is it because were we taught this, or I mean, when are we going to learn that you know, punitive type behaviors are demotivators?
I don't know that most of the time people care that it's demotivating other people. I think it's about making them feel superior and happier at the time. It's about them. So, you know, something goes wrong in life and your manager immediately asks who's to blame for that. It's about finding who is it that we can say is to blame, that we can punish, and then we can forget about it and move on, rather than trying to actually understand the systematic issues that might have led to this and solve those and solve the behavior changes, solve the system changes in order to make sure this doesn't happen again. It's kind of a lazy management style.
But at the same time, I know that I have been... I wouldn't say accused of, but I have been at fault when I've said, I want accountability. And I've used the word accountability maybe as a euphemism for blaming. Like, I don't necessarily want to hurt someone, but someone needs to be accountable for this mistake or this thing that has, you know, caused our project such pain. Am I wrong to want that?
What do you want out of that? What are you getting from being accountable?
What do I want out of that? I want it to never happen again. I want, you know, one wants competence. So sometimes people use punishment and accountability as a way of encouraging competence.
So, okay, so if they made a mistake, if it was truly a mistake, and they're not somebody who makes mistakes all the time, then punishing it will make absolutely no difference because they didn't choose to do that. It was an honest and true mistake. And at some point in the future, they may make that mistake again, and there's nothing that they, or a different mistake, but there's nothing that they can do to choose not to make that mistake. If there's a behavioural issue here, and maybe they're not taking enough care in a certain area, and they're consistently not taking enough care in that area, well, again, just saying you're accountable for that, does that actually get you where you want to be? Or actually sitting with them and discussing what behaviour you really want from them and what you see and how it's different from what you'd like it to be, and discussing with them why that is and working with them on changing their behaviours will actually get you what you want, instead of just saying you're accountable and I'm going to maybe dock your bonus or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you say that, and I forgive me, I'm unfortunately putting all of this into the context of my young children, because you've just described a parenting style or a management style that has the luxury of time. And I've had conversations with my wife before where I've said, you know, hey, we really ought to sit down with the 8-year-old and have a conversation about our expectations. And she'll say, I don't have time for that today. What I need from you now is compliance, meaning the child, like, stop taking food onto the couch. You always spill the food. Now, yes, if I had a half an hour, I'd sit down or an hour and have a whole conversation about, here's how it makes me feel. But when you're on a project and you really need to get that project shipping, you can't baby, for lack of a better word, you can't baby anybody. So how do you find that balance?
Well, I'm not saying that you never have to be directive in your management style. That doesn't mean that you need to punish. It's sometimes when things are urgent, you may be very specific about exactly what you need and who you need it from and when you need it by. That's not a punishment. But if you actually want to change that behavior in the longer term, if you actually are not facing an immediate emergency, so from a child point of view, I had my niece once run away from me and, in fact, my mum when we were taking her out. She was very young, probably about 4. And she ran away and we couldn't find her. And when we did find her, my mum smacked her legs immediately without even thinking. And then got very worried that my sister was going to find out about this. But my niece needed to learn that that was a dangerous thing that happened. And needed to remember not to do that again. And at that age, that's quite a hard thing to sit and explain and discuss. Whereas she remembered that her nan was very upset with her for doing that and that that was a bad thing. So I'm not saying that punishment never has a role. And certainly in the upbringing of children, there's a whole other thing. Who knows? I'm not a parent. I'm not even going to go there. But
there are parallels, of course. Running a team, running a family are very similar.
But these people are not children. These people's brains are fully grown. They are fully adult. And I think that's one of the huge issues that we face in a lot of industry, where people assume that they need to treat people as children. This is all about respect. This is all about starting with the assumption that this person is trying to do the best job that they can do.
Really important difference.
Absolutely. You know, this person is not deliberately causing you problems. And if they are, then that conversation really does need to happen. One of the things that managers, I think, are really bad at is there are two things that come out in studies that managers really hate to do. One is to fire somebody. Obviously an incredibly unpleasant experience. I'm very lucky in my career that I've only had to do it once. The other is having to manage poor performance. It's a really hard thing to do without blame, because blame isn't helpful in that. Right. Understanding why the poor performance is there, coming up with an agreement with the person about how that's going to be handled, working with them to do it, And ideally getting to a place where that's been addressed and where you can move on. It's actually, it takes time and it is hard. But as a manager, that's your job. Your mm-hmm. job is not to go and sit in meetings all the time, which is what my diary seems to be full of. It's actually to enable the team to do the job that they're there to do. And if that means understanding what's stopping them, irrespective of whether that's a technical thing that's stopping them, a lack of a resource somewhere, or whether it's actually the fact that they don't understand what it is that you need from them. Mm-hmm. A lot of managers get really frustrated at people and say, well, it's obvious they should have escalated that to me. But if you've never sat down with that person and said, these are the circumstances I need you to escalate to me in, when you've seen the fact that they're not doing it, mm-hmm. then just assuming that they can read your mind and know what you think that is unreasonable.
This is really useful. This is really useful. Let me ask you about two specific scenarios that I've experienced, and you tell me if I was punishing, or if not, if the person was punishing or not, because I think that these are very common scenarios. Now, there's a product that you can buy, and you've seen this a lot around continuous integration, which is the light that flashes when the build is broken. I've heard it called the siren of shame. You know, it's the, you know, it's the big kind of like either a traffic robot or a big siren that goes and fires off and it makes noise. If so and so, you know, broke the build. And I've seen people have lots of fun online with, you know, hacking these things so it'll actually talk, right? Louise broke the build, you know. Now, I think that there could be, theoretically, a healthy culture that would have fun with that, and no one would feel just particularly shamed. But at the same time, you don't really know, right? You could have a team of 10, and two of them really take that personally and feel like this is an unhealthy culture, or the other eight have quite of a light philosophy. Is that fun company culture, or is that punishment and shaming?
I think it's punishment and shaming if people in the team feel that way. But if the whole team find it fun, then it's a really good part of culture.
This assumes that the team's not going to, that the one or two people who don't like it feel comfortable enough to say this is not okay.
But if you're a good manager or a good reader of people, you should be able to tell that people are not happy with this. You know, this isn't about what people are willing to tell you. And if they don't come to you and say it, then it doesn't matter. In the same way that if you're in a meeting with the team and you've got some quieter members of the team, you behave differently with them to try and get them to contribute. Where other members of the team, you probably don't need to do anything at all to get them to contribute. You just use different techniques. I view a really important role of somebody who is leading a team to be, know the people, know the individuals, understand what they want and need. It's not about how you want to lead the team, but actually about how those individuals, what do they need from you? That's the important thing.
So my second example, my second question is, when what I ended up instituting when people broke the build was, you know, pretty straightforward, consequence-driven development, right? Natural consequences, we call it, which is you broke the build, you fix the build if you're able to. We used to have scenarios where I remember one particular scenario where a gentleman broke the build, didn't know it, went home, you know, 3 o'clock on a Friday afternoon, and I called the person. And I said, I'm sorry, you need to turn around and you need to fix this build. Breaking the build on Friday nights is not okay. Some people felt that was a punishment. I felt that was a very, very clear natural consequence because it would block everyone from working all weekend.
I think as long as people know and have agreed in the team, the rules of engagement with the team. So people understand the consequence of breaking the build means that they need to fix the build. And also that the team is enough of a team that they don't want the rest of the team not to be able to work on the weekend. That actually they take this as a responsibility that they have, then that's not a punishment. But it is important that it is agreed and understood within the team, rather than it just suddenly appearing, people not understanding that that's what's needed from them.
I see. So the difference in all of these scenarios that I've described is expectations and understanding ahead of time.
Absolutely. And also, as far as possible, the team setting their own way of working, setting their own rules for engagement within the team, rather than it being imposed by the manager or whoever.
Right. Bringing it down on high makes it feel even more like punishment.
Absolutely. Rather than it actually being about, this is our commitment to each other as team members.
This episode of Hansel Minutes is brought to you by Braintree Payments. By next year, maybe even next week, there could be a whole new way to pay. Maybe it'll be the next Bitcoin or the next Apple Pay, maybe even both. Fortunately, Braintree's full-stack payment platform is easily adaptable to whatever the future holds, so you can adapt easily too. You can accept everything from pounds to PayPal to that next big innovation from any device with one integration. And when that new payment method comes out, all you have to do is update a few lines of code. No late nights, no complicated recoding, no stress about staying ahead of the curve. Braintree Payments is here to help. You can learn more at braintreepayments.com/Hanselman. That's braintreepayments.com/Hanselman. The SDK is available in lots of languages, including .NET, Node, Java, Perl, and Python and Ruby. Check it out. So backing up a little bit and taking this in a different direction, you had said that when punishment is being the primary motivator within development, it's really not about the punished. It's about the punisher and what that's doing to them. Is it changing their brain? Do people who are more likely to drive development teams like this broken?
Yeah, there was a study last year that came out that actually looked at how whether different people had more propensity to punish than other people did. What they actually found was that if they quietened down a certain area of the prefrontal cortex, people wanted to punish less than when that area was more active. And this was a really interesting study. They asked the question, you know, should we actually test people who judge and punish for a living, such as judges, and decide levels of punishment? Should we actually look at how active that area of their brain is to see how suitable they are to be a judge in our society? But I would actually take that into any kind of area where people are able, I guess, and have authority over other people and could choose to punish in the workplace. And say, is that person doing that because they have very high activity in that area of their brain? Are they suitable for that kind of work and that kind of job? What kind of impact are they going to have on everybody else in the organization?
Whenever I hear, like, suitable, then I feel like, you know, who am I to judge? You know, like, who judges the judges, you know? There could be biological reasons that they are like that. There could be historical reasons. There could be all sorts of reasons why someone's like that. It gets into all the issues around company culture and who fits and who doesn't. And it's such a slippery slope.
Yeah, true. And, you know, the company culture I work in right now is actually quite hierarchical. But we are very deliberately trying to engender a change in that culture. And so is there some punishment around in my culture right now? Yes, there is. Do we get some questions around who's to blame when things go wrong? Yes, we do. But going back and actually questioning that blame at the point that it's starting to be talked about has a really good impact. And actually people go, oh, yeah, you're right. We need to actually look at what's gone wrong and why it's gone wrong and stopping that happening again, rather than actually trying to find the person to blame. And corporate cultures can be changed. It's hard and it takes a long time, but it can happen with the right support. But if you have somebody whose brain is just super active in this area and they just want to punish and they get a lot of pleasure from doing that, then I would argue they're probably just not suitable for that type of job.
And hopefully we discover this before it's too late.
Well, ideally.
Damage has been done.
Or maybe we can give them one of these electromagnetic coils to wear on their head that dampens down that area of their brain. They could wear a special hat.
And this is not a joke. This is really a thing.
This is absolutely a study that came out last year that found this to be the case.
I'm trying to think if there's people in our lives or in our governments that perhaps may need some of these dampening coils.
Most of the time, I think it's learned behavior. you know, where you have a manager who's only ever worked in a hierarchical organization, who's had a boss who's maybe very bullying. That's the only management style they've ever seen. So it's very likely to be the way that they deal with people, even if that's not their natural way of being. I think most of the time, just talking sense and explaining and showing more powerfully than anything else, the changes in behaviour which can be achieved when what you're doing is working with people and not demanding of people, is really powerful.
Of course, you lost me at talking sense into the managers, but I was with you up until then. So let's think a little bit more about this. So that their people's brains might be different. They may have things that cause them to want to punish. But you had a number of reasons. You had an enumeration of reasons why one might punish.
So yeah, there are four reasons why people might want to punish other people. So one of them is to stop that person doing the same thing again. So if that's your reason for punishing, then it has to be that it was their choice to do it in the first place, so that you are stopping them from doing it again by punishing. So something like a mistake in the workplace wouldn't fit into that, in my book.
So a malicious, some specific thing that they did to sabotage.
Or maybe they did something not knowing that it wasn't acceptable. And then you've punished them and now they know it's not acceptable and won't do it again. Or maybe they were just pushing at the edges. The next reason is to stop other people from doing that thing. So if you punish somebody very hard, so let's say they make a mistake, it's in live, they get their salary docked, everybody else knows that's happened, then they won't do that. No one else is going to do that thing. Again, that assumes that people are choosing to do that thing and that it isn't just a mistake. The third one is just for retribution, because it feels good to the person doing the punishing. It feels like that person deserves to be punished and I'm punishing them. And the final one is where you have something that's actually affected an individual. You might punish somebody in order to compensate the victim. So you might fine somebody and give the money to the person who actually had the bad effect of whatever the activity was. I would argue that the vast majority of the time in the workplace when people are punishing people, it's actually for that third reason, for retribution, because it feels like a good thing to do, rather than to change the behaviour or to look at why those situations happened and how we can avoid it happening again.
So thinking about how to avoid having things happen again, I hope that people who are listening are thinking that they've either maybe worked at a company like this before, or maybe, you know, God forbid, they are in a company like that right now. I wrote about fear-driven development a while back, and it resonated with a lot of people. I think when we find that, wait a second, she's talking about my organization. What do we do, though, if we are downstream? How do you, if you're living in a fear-driven or punishment-driven environment, how do you save yourself other than quitting?
I don't know that there is an easy way to do that. I think maybe quitting is the way to go.
I know which is ultimately a punishment upstream, though, isn't it?
Well, it depends. But in the organization I'm in at the minute, the thing that makes the biggest difference is the fact that the CIO is very people-oriented. So the previous CIO was far less so, but the current CIO is very people oriented and he wants to make this change in culture. And that means that anybody lower stream who also wants to make that change in culture has a champion and can say to people, I don't think we should be doing it this way, because there's support at a higher level. But without that support at a higher level, it's an incredibly difficult thing to do.
Yeah. The way that we phrase it at my company is we call it executive air cover. Right? If you're going into, you know, to a fight, do you have air cover at some level that is reasonably high, especially if it's a policy type of a change? You really need a champion, don't you?
Yeah, definitely. You know, at the end of the day, you have to look at organizations as, do they fit you and who you are as an individual? And part of that is, how do you want to be treated? How do you deserve to be treated? And do they treat you that way? And when they don't, can you have a reasonable conversation with them about that? And do they treat other people that way also? That matters to me. So I have values around people being respected, around openness and honesty. If I'm in a management chain and I'm asked to keep something secret for anything other than that doesn't sound like a good reason, if they can't give me a reason to keep it secret, then I would absolutely challenge that because it goes against one of my core values. And I think, and if I was working at an organisation where that was happening all the time, I would leave because my core values would not be in sync with theirs.
So when we talk about, you know, fit and culture fit and company fit, it really is about values more than anything like that. Those are the reasons to join a company and to quit a company.
Absolutely. If I go for an interview at an organisation, I have lots and lots of questions for them because I want to know, is this an organisation I want to work in? And the older I get, the more it matters to me. I think maybe the more choice I have about where I work. But when I was younger, it was just, yay, I've been offered a job. Now it's very much, do I want to work there? Is this somewhere where I can make a difference, where I'm going to feel comfortable, where they do something that I care about? So the organization I work for right now is mutual. It's owned by its customers. There aren't any shareholders. And that is really important to me. And it's one of the things that makes me engaged as an employee there. And it was one of the things that I was looking for when I last moved, was that level of caring about what the organization does.
Mm-hmm. And as such, you as a manager now, mm-hmm. are not driving development through punishment. What is your motivator for your people who work for you?
I guess it's still PDD, but it's people-driven development.
That's a PDD week. I think we can get behind.
And it's totally about empowerment. It's totally about, this is an organization where when I joined, a third of people in IT had been there more than 10 years. It's a really unusual scenario. I've not seen it elsewhere in my career. And it was very inward-looking. So there were a number of things that weren't done there that are pretty standard in the industry now. So things like continuous integration wasn't anything that they did. Yeah. Automated testing wasn't anything that they did at that point. And we do those things now, and we've moved on and are doing those. But through people getting engaged and understanding and wanting to do those things rather than through dictate of you will do these things. It's more of a getting people excited around it. One of the things I love about where I work at the moment is there's so little resistance to change. People have done something this way for so long, but they love a better way of doing it. You know, I absolutely adore my job. I can make so much difference. And that's because of the people who work there, the culture there, and the fact that they really want to do things as best as they can for mm-hmm. the members of the organization. And, you know, it's such an enabling culture in that way.
Yeah, that sounds like power-driven development in the context of empowerment.
Oh, I like that.
You like that? You can have that one for free.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for chatting with me today.
Thank you. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Louise Elliott, and you can find her online and talking about punishment-driven development. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.